Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Beautiful day today in San Francisco. It's Willie Mays' 90th birthday. We're going to have John Shea stop on by in about a half an hour to talk about one of the singular greatest all-time baseball players ever, where the rubber meets the road in the mythology, the legend, the truth of Willie Mays. He is certainly worth your time, attention, and worth studying, because it is an unbelievable career, to say the least. I mean, it's a massive understatement to say that Willie Mays had an unbelievable career. I got a hot take. I feel like I'm going to get it out soon here because it needs to be said. And we're going to find out what you really think about war, Ray, when it comes to explaining who a player is, their real value in the league. And it's tough to boil down a career into one number. But baseball certainly trying to do that. They're trying to look at it this way. The theme of baseball over the last 10 years is, let's take all the personality and mystery out of it and boil down everything to just one number, and we'll go with that. So if that's what baseball wants, that's what baseball's getting. And when you start boiling it down to numbers, numbers should speak louder than anything else. And that often did not happen when they were deciding MVPs in the, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s, right? Didn't happen. And I wonder how often Willie Mays's, the fact that he was a black guy, worked against him in Hall of Fame votes. I mean, it's not always something that you can put into the mix, because he's lost MVP contests to other black men. So it really wasn't an issue in giving the award out if another black guy won it. But I think that there are just elements of information wasn't passed around like it used to. You certainly didn't see anyone. The internet was not available. And you had a less informed MVP electorate back then than you do now.
See, I don't think it's any of those things. I mean, for instance, the 2 years that Ernie Banks won MVP, Mays had better offensive numbers, but Banks did it as a shortstop. And the voters back then had rarely seen a shortstop who could put up power numbers like that and still be a competent player. I mean, just shortstops didn't do that. So I think the 2 years that he got it, there was at least a little bit of novelty about it. And they weren't numbers that would embarrass anybody. It wasn't like Mays hits, you know, 58 homers and Banks limped in with 49. Banks hit 49 and drove in a bunch of runs. The thing that people would point to, though, is that Banks played on a bunch of Cubs teams that were largely awful.
Yep.
So how could you be the most valuable player? But if you were going to do that, then there should have been a couple of years where Maury Wills should have won MVP, because he was the most important offensive player the Dodgers had, at least in the early part of that decade, because the Dodgers never scored. They just pitched the hell out of it. So if you're not going to give that award to Sandy Koufax or Don Drysdale, you know, and you're looking for, quote, the most valuable player, you know, maybe it's Wills. But Robinson won the year that Cincinnati won. I think that the thing that hurt Mays if you want to talk about MVP voting, playing on the West Coast.
Sure.
Because you didn't have access to a whole lot of TV. And frankly, even then, you know, when you woke up in the morning, you weren't going to get that West Coast box score.
Right. It'd be 2 days late in your next paper.
Yeah. So I think that was part of it, too, because, you know, the MVP voters could only know what they saw, which meant they got to see Mays like, what, 12 times a year? You know, and if you don't get the right 12 games, you know, or you saw somebody more often that had a phenomenal year, then that's who you would vote for. So I don't really hold that against anybody. That's just you didn't have the tools then. You just didn't. And you couldn't, and nobody wanted to vote just off numbers because baseball in the 60s was low scoring and more subtle than it is now.
Right. So the year that Maury Wills did win the MVP is one of those years where, you know, you look at his numbers and you compare him to Mays and you say, well, how did this guy win it? And then you go to stolen bases.
Yeah.
And he had 104 when, you know, it was just unheard of to steal bases.
And stolen bases matter.
Yeah.
Or mattered then.
Right. So Barry Bonds finishing with 7 MVPs. He had the benefit of a player being able to have a career on the West Coast, and you're still exposed to it through cable television and obviously the internet and everything that happened, the attention around the game. You couldn't hide anyone on any coast on a Major League Baseball team. Just the world changed. Bonds winning 7 MVPs. On that alone, when you see that Willie Mays only won 2 MVPs, concluding that Barry Bonds was a much better player is something that a lot of people would do. I mean, 7 is officially a bigger number than 2, a lot bigger number. So today I went down a Willie Mays rabbit hole. 90th birthday, why not? Ray, the Willie Mays rabbit hole, first of all, it's phenomenal. I mean, 2 MVPs, 24 All-Stars, 12 Gold Gloves, Rookie of the Year in 1951. And what's amazing is that you really can't find a season where Willie finished in the top 5 in MVP voting where he didn't have the better season than the guy who actually won it, if you believe in WAR. Wins over replacement, wins above replacement. I think it's probably the single best way to boil down one guy into one number that explains their level of greatness and impact. There is not a single MVP handed out to a guy above Willie, if Willie was in the top 5-6 voting that year, that actually had a better year than Willie Mays, until you get all the way, Ray, to his last great season. Willie's last great season was in 1966. He never hit more than 30 home runs after that. He never drove in 100 runs again after 1966. So Willie's last great year is 66. And in that year, he got out-warred by both Sandy Koufax and Juan Marichal, who had unbelievable years. But neither one of those guys was still the MVP that year. 66 was the year Roberto Clemente won the MVP. And Willie Mays had a better WAR than Clemente that year.
But it's interesting you picked that year out because it is the only year of the years that you dove into where the team that won the pennant didn't have the MVP. And the thing to remember about Mays, why maybe he didn't have more MVPs, is because the Giants won one pennant
right
while he was there. And that's got nothing to do with him. The Dodgers just, they crushed you with pitching. You know, 64 was Ken Boyer. Cardinals won the World Series that year. And even though the voting, you know, happens at the end of the regular season, guys would wait till the end of the regular season and then mail their ballots in. So basically, the team that won it all had an enormous advantage, because the other thing about the MVP back then, and maybe still now, is that the best guy on the best team is a huge favorite unless there's a reason not to pick him. And so that's why, of all those years, the only year where the pennant winner didn't provide the MVP was the Clemente year.
So the reason why I picked 66 is because that was, like I said, Willie's last gaudy number great year. And I think it's the highest he finished at the end of his career in any MVP vote. that 66 year. That's why it stood out to me. Do you believe that war, if you had to boil it down, if you had to put your reputation behind one number explaining who a baseball player was, would you be comfortable with war?
No, because I'm not comfortable with any one number.
Right. But,
if you forced me to pick one,
what number, what slice of analytics would you choose under duress to explain a player?
Under duress, and you're still going to hate the answer, is I would take all of the various wars there are and try to average them out. Because there are different calculations that by different people and calling it the same stat. So I would find like the four definitions of war.
Right, because America has their own. Baseball Prospectus has their own.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I would do. I mean, war is very good. It's got its limitations. But the more numbers you apply, the more those limitations get filtered out. So that's what I would do.
Knowing that there is no perfect way, it is the best of the imperfect numbers to explain.
Yeah, if you pile enough of them on top of each other, because they eventually, they all cover all the strengths.
Willie Mays has the fifth greatest WAR in the history of Major League Baseball. Now, I've always said, with all due respect to Willie Mays, to me, the greatest Giant of all time is Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds did it, number one, in front of my own two eyes, which I'll say matters to me. Number two, the numbers bear out greater production. Number three, he ended up with the greater numbers. And number four, Barry Bonds ended up with a greater WAR. Barry Bonds is fourth all time in terms of career WAR over Willie Mays. Babe Ruth, number one. Walter Johnson, number two. Cy Young, number three. Barry Bonds, number four. Willie Mays, number five. Ty Cobb, number six. Henry Aaron, number seven. Roger Clemens, number eight. Tris Speaker at nine. Honus Wagner at 10.
Okay, and you get to have that number, but Mays was a far better defensive outfielder. And I'm talking about range.
By nature
and
of the position, of course he is. He's the center fielder.
And to me, that's one of the things that separates him and Bonds for me. And Bonds wasn't a terrible defensive outfielder, and he hid his liabilities by being very good at positioning himself.
Yes.
So he had game acumen that I think you have to factor into this. But just in terms of, you know, being able to cut off a ball in the gap, being able to throw a strike to third base when you're in right center, I think that counts.
Sure it does.
And that's why I say that Mays was better, because while Bonds had one weakness, Mays had none. And to me, that's the deal breaker for me. That's, you know, Mays could beat you doing everything.
At what point does a fielding weakness get covered up by an extraordinary amount of intentional base on balls, to where even though Willie had his full six tools, compared to Barry's just five tools, right? Because Barry was a five-tool guy too. So, you know, like, at what point do you look at Bonds and say, well, over a three-year period, he was intentionally walked darn near 400 times, and that alone makes up for any range that Willie had that was superior defensive mastery?
Here's where I factor in the eras in which they played. Mays played in an era when offense was greatly depleted, to the point where in 1969 they lowered the mound and brought in four expansion teams because offense was so bad.
Right.
And he was putting up those ridiculous numbers at a time when very few people were. Bonds was doing that at a time of great offensive abilities across the board. He was by far the best of those people. I mean, that's why I would put him third.
Right. Barry was shooting threes in the three-point era.
Yeah. And so I think that counts too.
Okay.
I mean, it's just context, but you know, I just remember Bonds affecting games in more ways. And by way, I mean, you know, Bonds could change a game like with one swing. There's no question about that. Mays could change a game doing anything. And that's the one thing that I take away from that, is that he hit gaudy offensive numbers at a time when there were none to be had. And defensively, I mean, he was death to flying things. Anything in the air he caught. I mean, you've seen the video of him basically hurdling Bobby Bonds to catch that ball against the right field fence at Candlestick Park. You know, you've seen the play at the Polo Grounds.
Right.
I mean, you know, he was extraordinary. I mean,
what's a shame is you see the play at the Polo Grounds, you see him whip the ball back, but you never see where the ball goes.
Yeah. I mean, because they only have two camera shots of it. You know, and you know, it, I mean, he says to this day that the catch wasn't that big a deal to him. It was the throw. And the throw was, you know, it looks when it leaves his hands like he threw a pop fly. No, he threw the hell out of that ball.
So is Pete Rose on the afternoon show today? Is that where he was? Was he on with Middays? Oh, that's right. We're the afternoon show. Sorry, I forget these things. He was on Middays today, and Pete Rose, again, when it comes to trusting Pete Rose, not any further than I could throw him. And when it comes to getting into the Hall of Fame, the answer is when he dies, he can come in. Pete Rose is detestable in many ways, shapes, and forms. But when it comes to talking about historical baseball figures, he still clearly has a voice in the room. Pete Rose today on having a locker in between Willie Mays and Hank Aaron. Here's Pete Rose.
Well, I remember my first All-Star game, and that was in Minneapolis, 1965. And as you know, when you go to an All-Star game, you always go the day before, you know, to make sure the uniforms are there and the bats were shipped and everything like that, and the workout. And I'll never forget, the game was in Minneapolis, and my locker was between Willie and Henry. Wow. And I'm a rookie. No, this is my third year, but I'm a rookie for the All-Star game. And I just slapped myself in the jaw and said, what the hell am I doing here? And the great thing about both of those guys is they treated me like I was one of the guys. You know, and when you're a young player and you're in the same locker room with Mays and Aaron and Clemente and those guys, and they make you feel at home, it's very important to you. And I tried to do the same thing later on in my life, because I was lucky enough to play in 17 of those All-Star games. And the only one we lost, and I think both of them were in that game, was the one in Detroit in 71. Because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there were 28 Hall of Famers in that All-Star game.
Unbelievable moment in time, obviously. Again, this is how Pete Rose ruined his reputation. When he talks about losing All-Star games, I think he had the under that night. You know, that's the way I look at it.
I will say this in his defense. Back then, the All-Star game mattered. So even if he wanted to try to shave a run here or there, he'd have been beaten to death by the other guys that he was in the clubhouse with.
Right. And look, I'll say this about Pete, too. The cheating came from the dugout. He didn't hold back as a player.
That we know of. Because his stories were, I never gambled on a game. Well, okay, sometimes I gamble on a game, but I never gambled against my own team.
Right.
You know, and then, but the stories have expanded to the point where I don't know when he got his gambling Jones started.
You're right about that. Look, there's no
That's
reason
all
I'm to saying.
Trust him I have
at
no
all.
Proof to say that he never bet as a player, except his word, and I don't trust his word.
Look at it this way. Pete Rose is so established as a liar that I need a picture of that locker in between Mays and Aaron before I even believe him there. I mean, that's what happens. This is why kids, be careful with your reputation. You only get one of them.
Well, it's the Al Rosen told me a story once.
Tell everyone who Al Rosen is.
Al Rosen was the former general manager of the Giants, right up until they sold to Peter McGowan and his group in 1993.
Right, this is Candlestick days, baby.
Yeah, and he told me once, because I was asking about what you do as a general manager. I said, well, you know, what about lying? You know, because, I mean, that's a tool in the arsenal, too.
What do you mean? What about lying?
Yeah. I mean, okay. Sometimes you have to lie. You
sure.
have to lie to us. You have to lie to other general managers.
Yeah.
You got to lie to players. And he said, for me, lying was like spending money. Every time you told a lie, you ran the risk of people thinking that you're a liar. And once they think you're a liar, you're done. Which means that whenever possible, tell the truth. Only use a lie as a last resort, because it doesn't take a lot to run out of money when you're spending it on a lie.
Well, yeah. And look, I've heard this, the saying, I think it was my grandfather who used to tell me, like, look, people are going to play fast and reckless with your reputation. Don't make it easier for them. Don't make it easier for them by getting yourself in a lie that you didn't even need to tell to explain what just happened. Just go with the truth. That usually does work. I'll tell you what also usually works, going with the truth. Kids, don't touch those blasting caps.
Hi, this is Willie Mays. Baseball is a game of playing to win, but playing is safe and so is life. You can play hard, but play it safe. If you kids find anything that looks like those, don't chase them. Those are blasting caps. Remember now, don't chase them. Blasting caps are used almost every place. Explosives are used, like in a construction work. But you protect your arms and hands and legs and save your eyes. If you see a blasting cap, remember now, don't touch them. Tell the police or a fireman, whatever it is. Have fun like I do with those and not with these.
Blasting caps, don't touch them. This is the world we used to live in, folks. You got helicopter parents now worried about what time Tristan needs to get to soccer practice. Back in the day, you let your kids play on construction sites where construction workers left dynamite, explosives, and blasting caps around.
Also, back in the day...
Don't touch them.
Back in the day, they didn't mind ambient noise when you're doing a public service read.
Oh, no,
you could barely hear what he was saying behind, like, the crowd noise during batting practice. That's going to get the message across.
They weren't worried about audio quality back then.
No, they were not.
We
got Willie Mays. He says he could do it now. Let's just do it now. And if it sounds like crap, it sounds like crap.
At the end of the day, kids, you want to do this. Don't touch them.
Yeah.
You want to snap your fingers. Stay away from blasting caps. Don't touch them.
Well, that was a time when kids would listen to something like that and go, yeah, maybe I won't do that. Now, they want blasting caps for Christmas.
I got to be honest with you.
Dad, I need Gelignite.
Seriously. I mean, blasting caps? What the hell kind of world was used to? What do we do with these explosives at the end of the workday? Should we bring them back to the office or just leave them here on the site and they'll be here tomorrow when
we get
here?
Well, they didn't leave them.
Yeah, just leave them.
Yeah, they didn't leave a box of them. The one would fall out here or there. But, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, there's a sign over a box of blast caps saying, you know, take them. They're free. They're like Tootsie Rolls.
Don't touch them. John Shea. He touched all on the topic of Willie Mays when he wrote a New York Times best-selling book on Willie Mays, and we're going to talk to him next since it is Willie Mays' 90th birthday. And remember, kids, blasting caps, don't touch them. We are brought to you by our good friends at Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises. Oh, and I also need to tell you that we're also brought to you by our good friends at Network Capital Funding. And blasting caps.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
In an hour from now, we're going to get you out to Warriors Live tonight. Warriors and Oklahoma City Thunder. Not just playing tonight, playing tomorrow, or excuse me, Saturday as well, as the Warriors got a 6-game homestand to wrap up their regular season beginning tonight, again, against the dreadful Oklahoma City Thunder. Kelly Oubre Jr., by the way, per Shams, is going to be reevaluated for that wrist injury in 1 to 2 weeks, which means if they go to a play-in, what, he will be there, won't be there? Well, no, I guess
he said reevaluated. It didn't say cleared.
There you go. So will or won't? I was asking a question. It was like a redundant kind of thing there. I was just throwing out. Absolutely thrilled to have John Shea join us here, because when it comes to talking about Willie Mays, he gets to use the phrase New York Times bestseller to describe the way he goes talking about Willie Mays. His book, 24 Stories About Willie and Lessons, just a monster. And, John, thank you so much for joining us here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Kolsky's not with us today, but it's me and it's Ray, and it's the 90th birthday for Willie Mays, the longest or the oldest living Hall of Famer and certainly one of the greatest Hall of Famers of all time. Thank you so much for joining us. How you doing?
Pretty good. You're talking about New York Times bestseller. I guess the lesson learned is make sure that Willie Mays is your co-author, right?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, if you can go ahead and add his name to just about anything in baseball, you're going to do better with it than if you didn't. How great was it to get the access to him, around him? Like, how many hours did you really spend together as you were working on the book?
More than 100. Over the course of, you know, a few years, speaking also with maybe more than 200 folks who knew him from childhood, the Negro Leagues, New York Giants, the Mets, San Francisco Giants, you know, people in his life, friends, Hall of Famers, teammates, just a wide variety of people. And, yeah, man, project of a lifetime, right?
It's amazing.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, you were granted so much access. And I'm guessing some of that access began, John, before you even decided, I'm writing a book about this guy, because you were around the Giants so much, and so was Willie. I'm guessing a lot of your conversations began with no intention of getting to a book at all. It just kind of happened.
No, you're right. I mean, I think Ray and I were covering the Giants, right, in 1988, right? And
yeah, you've been riding his coattails for damn near three full decades.
But I was covering the Padres back in the early 80s and came back to the Bay Area, or mid 80s rather, came back to the Bay Area in 88. And Willie had been there since 86 because Lurie and Rosen brought him back into the organization after he came off his suspension. And what a smart thing that Bowie Kuhn did, suspending him and Mickey Mantle because of their association with gamblers. As if they did anything more than play golf and sign autographs and hang out with clients at these casinos. There was no free agency. They didn't make the big money, and there was no pension. They didn't have anything after baseball, so they took what they could get, and then they get suspended. And Ubaroff comes in 84, 85, brings them back, and Giants brought him back in 86, and he's been there ever since. So yeah, I mean, how would you not hang out with Willie if he's in the clubhouse that you cover? And I guess over the years, there was a certain level of trust because I kept writing about him and he kept answering questions. So from there, I asked him about 2005 or something about a book. And he said, you know, I'd like to have it in classrooms and gear it toward young adults and kids. And, you know, it's that, but it's also geared toward anybody, really. Anybody who loves, you know, stories about Willie or, you know, what he's doing now, who he's helped, who's helped him. It's pretty, it pretty much covers everything in his life and his career. So it was pretty amazing to do all that.
Since we know all the things he did do on the baseball field, is there anything that he ever told you that he said he wasn't as good at? I mean, was there one skill related to baseball in any way where he didn't feel like he had mastered it?
Well, it's a good question because there's supposed to be five tools, you know, hitting with power and defending and throwing and running. But as a kid, he was a pitcher as well. And his dad said, don't pitch, don't catch, you're going to get hurt. So I always kind of wondered, you know, did you mind not pitching? And he said, no, not at all, because playing center field every day was his way of staying in the lineup and playing every day. So, you know, there were a couple of newspapers in the Birmingham area that projected this kid, once signed by the Giants out of the Black Barons, would be a major league pitcher. I mean, that's how good his arm was. So imagine him if he were a pitcher. I mean, he could have been, you know, what Babe Ruth was, a pitcher and hitter, Otani, a pitcher and hitter. But I think he was satisfied with what he did. He didn't have any gripes or regrets about the game. He never said anything about, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
I don't know if you have talked to him recently, but how would you estimate the level of thrill he felt once he learned that his one Negro League home run in 1948 is now going to count toward his major league total?
Well, I called him. Level of thrill. I called him that day, and And I said, well, hey, Willie, that home run you hit in 48 as a 17-year-old will count with major league stats. He said, what do you mean one? You know, he remembers hitting a lot more. But he did hit a lot more the next 2 years, 49 and 50. And they don't count those stats because they will count only them through 1948, which was the last year of the Negro League World Series, which Mays played in. But when I called him, it wasn't, hey, finally, or good for me. It was, he basically recited the roster on that team, what it means for them, you know, because those guys' stats now would count, you know, and they're not glorious stats. They didn't have huge careers, you know, because they weren't superstars, although Artie Wilson had a great career with the Oakland Oaks. In fact, Artie Wilson was the shortstop who got cut from the Giants the day Willie Mays was called up. I mean, back then, you either had to have, you know, two black guys or four black guys or six black guys because they had to room together. I mean, as crazy as that sounds right now, that was the quota. So you bring up Willie, well, who are we going to send out? Well, here's the shortstop who's not playing. And Artie Wilson actually preferred that because he got more money playing with the Oaks, and he played every day, and he loved it because it was more integrated than a lot of the major league teams were.
John Shea here with us, 95.7 The Game. That's amazing that they had a quota that was based on, well, we either need parties of two or parties of four. That's talk about different times. John, so one of the reasons why I really wanted to have you on today, and one of the reasons why it's always good to have Ray as a resource to lean on, is because I think we can all agree that when old men start waxing poetic about baseball nostalgia, they become terrible eyewitnesses. It's always bigger, better than they, you know, the memories are always thick and rich, you know, fishtails, if you will. Nobody ever boated a 10-pound walleye. It always goes to 12 for the sake of the story. So where does the rubber really meet the road? On the mythology of Mays, who he really was as a player, the all-time great, measuring him against Bonds, greatest Giant ever status. Where does the rubber really meet the road on Willie Mays in terms of the memories are correct or the back of the baseball card is correct? Like, how would you describe?
Well, you know, you talk to guys like, you know, Ray, you probably saw him in his prime. You know, Jenkins certainly did. You know, Scott Osler. You know, these guys will talk about how, you know, he wasn't just, you know, the best player on the field, but the most entertaining, you know, with the basket catches and the cap line off and, you know, the smiles and the fact that he was so darn confident that, you know, nothing surprised him. He always was a step ahead of the opponent, his teammate, his own manager, for goodness sake. So often teammates relied more on him than they did the guy who's getting paid to manage.
That's amazing. So, Ray also said that he used to call like pitches from center field. He would set up the defense the way a catcher would from center field. Did he ever have designs on being a manager, or did his that nonsense gambling like dash that for him?
Yeah, he never, you know, got in line and said, I want to manage, because he kind of considered himself a manager anyway, as a player. You know, I mean, Frank Robinson was a player manager. Pete Rose was a player manager. Willie was never a player manager, but he really was. I mean, Alvin Dark named him the first African-American captain in Major League history in 1964. And, you know, that was a long time coming because he was really the captain anyway. And now it just became official. But you talk to teammates, whether it's Hal Lanier or Chris Beyer or Felipe or Orlando or any of the guys who played with them in the 60s, they will tell you that oftentimes he ran the team. Billy Williams tells a story when he was with the Cubs that there was a case of one team thinking the other team was stealing signs. So at that point in the game, Willie said, okay, from now on, just look at me, guys. I'll give you the sign. So he called the game from center field, which is about, you know, 300 feet away from home plate. So all eyes were on Willie, and, you know, and the way Billy Williams said, we could no longer steal the signs because Willie was in charge. But it's stuff like that that kind of set him apart. And we're talking about the five tools. It's really the sixth tool, the fact that he's kind of outsmarts everybody and anticipates everything. And really, and it's not just something that, you know, he falls out of bed and goes 3 for 4, it is hard work. And, he doesn't really talk about it, but others do. You know, McCovey used to say, you know, he ticked us all off because, you know, the first day of spring training, we're just trying to lose weight, and he's in mid-season form. But, you know, Willie worked at it, and, you know, it wasn't all just, you know, just supernatural powers. You know, you don't become a baseball player without a lot of hard work. So I mean, that's got to be mentioned as well.
This is a delicate question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there a sense that he will be coming to the ballpark soon, later? Are his days of going to the ballpark over? What's his availability for being on site for guys to talk to still?
I think it's almost a certainty he'll be there tomorrow night.
So he's not there tonight then? He's slacking off, even though they're not playing?
No game. I mean, the homestand opener is tomorrow.
I know.
So
he'll be there tomorrow then is the plan.
Not there yet. Yeah. So he'll they'll have a big pregame ceremony and tribute, but it won't be the normal, you know, 15 guys in chairs behind him.
Right.
Because of the virus. It'll be him and a vehicle most likely, and some waving and maybe a couple of words and, you know, a lot of applause. It won't be a full house, obviously, for reasons we know about, but there will be a cake and there will be a happy birthday song, and, you know, it'll treat it just like any other Willie Mays birthday over the last many, many years. So the bummer for Willie is that he can't go in the clubhouse, and, you know, maybe in July, maybe in August, who knows? But right now, you know, they have the tiers 1, 2, and 3. You can't go here, you can't go there. And even if you're Willie Mays, you got to follow the protocol. So that's the thing now. And he talks about that. I was at his place just a few days ago, and it seemed every conversation turned to either kids or returning to the clubhouse or hanging with the guys, or because that's kind of his second home. He digs it and has a lot of fun there. He holds court, and he's always willing to help others. I mean, if you're going to be on the payroll, you might as well show up, and that's always been his mentality.
No doubt. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you joining us today, John. Let me just ask you one question about the 2021 San Francisco Giants, not Willie Mays memories. What do you think of this upstart first place, kind of came out of nowhere with a good first month baseball team?
Well, as we learned last year, and as we learned in 18 and 19, it's not about 1 month or 2 months. I mean, they were 29 and 31 and missed the playoffs by one game, but what does that even mean? Because most of the teams made the playoffs in 2020. But in 18 and 19, they had 500 records in August, and they were still in it, but then they just fell to earth in September and had lousy final months and had brutal records. They haven't had a winning record in 4 years. So to get all excited about this, 1/6 into the season doesn't do you any good. It's nice for them to lead this far, but I mean, they've been in races, and they, you know, it's not about 1 month, but it's about 6 months. But shoot, it's encouraging because their rotation is sporting a real nice ERA overall. Their bullpen is kind of out of whack, and the old guys in their mid-30s, you know, Crawford, Belt, and Posey seem to be coming through. And when I was over at Willie's house the other day, Posey was up, and he was talking about how he really enjoys Posey, and not just because he's a three-time champ and all that, but because he uses all fields. And that's what Willie Mays always tried to do, especially at Candlestick when that wind wouldn't allow him to hit a fly ball over the left field wall. You had to hit a line drive, or you had to hit it in the jet stream out there to right center. And these are all things that he taught Kevin Mitchell: here, use this bigger bat and don't pull the ball. And then Mitchell listened to him and was the MVP in 89. So there are a lot of life lessons there, man. And it goes through the generations, and, you know, it all starts with the guy who's going to be honored tomorrow night, who's 90 today. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool indeed. John, thank you very much. Really appreciate your time today, and hopefully we'll be seeing you at a ballpark near us soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Damon. Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, never mention it again.
There he is, the one and only John Shea. Again, really wrote a great book about Willie Mays. Yes.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he's going to the ballpark tomorrow night, only because I would have thought that COVID precautions would have made that dodgy. Not because he shouldn't go, but because I would have thought that restrictions would have been too much.
An abundance of caution would mean see you next year. Yeah, I agree. I'm surprised by that, too. We'll see. Maybe it'll be an on tape. You know, Ray, how about this? What do you think about Willie Mays in a luxury box? Maybe not out on the field, just kind of up in a box, you know, like just sequestered in his own.
That sounds like what they're going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to give him a victory lap, on the back of a convertible and then
sure.
Get him to the elevator is what it sounds like.
Well, look, hopefully it'll be a nice little ceremony for a guy who certainly has seen a lot of birthdays, 90 of them, as a matter of fact, today. Happy birthday, indeed, to Willie Mays. So, that interesting note that he had about the – you're waving at me. What is it? What is it, Lucas?
Sorry, can you hear me now? All right, very good. I have two things for you. Let me know if you want to hear either. The Giants put out birthday messages for Willie Wayne. Wow. Willie Mays.
Yeah, relax. Just calm down. Take a breath. Start over.
All right.
Drop that gin bottle.
The Giants' Twitter page put out a happy birthday message to Willie Mays from two rappers, Lil Wayne and Snoop Dogg. Would you like to hear either?
Yes, of course we would. But it's glad. I'm really happy that Willie is getting messages on Twitter. I mean, he's always on Twitter. Willie Mays loves Twitter. But okay, it's like the people who wish their mothers like a happy birthday on Facebook, knowing that you're just supposed to call your mother and do that. Is this a little performative? Okay, sure it is. Anyway, give me Snoop.
Uncle Willie, it's your nephew Snoop Dogg, man. First of all, happy birthday. You're way up there in age. But what I've never been able to ask you and understand was, how did you make that catch? Uncle Willie, can you please share that game with me so I can get that catch in my arsenal? In the meantime, of a 20 time, happy birthday from Big Snoop Dogg, Willie Mays. G's up.
There you go. G's up, Willie Mays. Okay, Snoop Dogg. Birthday message for Willie Mays. Glad to see he stepped off that set with Martha Stewart long enough to go ahead and do that.
He could have blown it off.
He could have.
I mean,
there's no, but why would you blow off a Willie Mays? Look at it this way, Ray. You don't do anything performative. If they asked you to cut a Willie Mays happy birthday, would you do it?
I don't know.
I bet you would.
If I wanted to wish him a happy birthday, I'd go to the park.
Well, yeah, that's pretty cool.
I mean, because the only person who really needs to hear that is him.
Right.
The rest of it is sort of, hey, look at me wishing Willie Mays a happy birthday.
There's a little of that going on. That's all right, though. So, what'd you say, Lil Wayne, Lucas?
That's right. Lil Wayne next.
All right, let's hear Kyle Shanahan's favorite rapper wish Willie Mays a happy birthday.
Mr. Mays, how you doing? Mr. Carter here. I want to wish you the happiest birthday ever. I heard you turning 90. You're a young buck. Say hey, kid, over there. I see you. Thank you for everything you did to contribute to the awesome game of baseball. I have three sons. My middle son plays baseball. You already know. Thank you. Over the shoulder catch, awesome. But it was about what you buried on your shoulders, the weight that was on your shoulders as well. I want to thank you for the time you served in the Army during the war. Crazy, man. Thank you. Thank you for everything. I hope you have the happiest birthday. Getting better with time as we pray the times get better.
Look, I'm not saying we're here to judge birthday messages, but Lil Wayne's was fantastic compared to Snoop's. Jeez.
Well, you know, I'm not comparing them, but two things rang out to me. One, he mentioned the 2 years where Mays didn't play because he was in the Army. And that's always been sort of like this weird hole in his career that very few other great players have ever had to deal with. And the only other one that comes immediately to mind is Ted Williams. And the other one was, he called him Mr. Mays.
Yes.
Which is...
it's a Southern gentleman right there.
It's the highest honorific that a young generation can pay to an older generation. It's, I don't use Mr. anything, but you earned it because it's important to you.
Right.
That's a statement.
It is. I'll also say this, in Snoop's defense of that, Snoop Dogg turns 90 in like 3 years himself. Like, he doesn't have to go Willie Mays on. He doesn't have to go Mr. to anyone. Like, Snoop Dogg is closer to 70 than he is young.
Yeah, but 70 to 90 is still a huge gap.
It is a big gap.
Uncle Willie.
There you
see,
go.
See, Uncle Willie's okay, too.
It is.
I mean, it just, there. There's a familiarity about it, which suggests to me that they have spent some time chatting about this, that, or the other thing. But I guarantee you in every conversation, Snoop is being deferential toward Willie rather than the other way around, because Willie doesn't do deference and he doesn't insist that you be deferent to him.
No, he's here's the thing, for a guy who is nothing short of the greatest living baseball player probably today, it used to be really easy to meet Willie Mays. Like, when you got over the whole, like, oh my God, I'm about to shake the hand of Willie Mays, he made it a very natural thing to do once you got over it. Like, it was easy to meet Willie Mays. I also pooped myself a little when I did it for the first time.
He's mentioned that.
I'm glad he remembered me.
Well, he remembered you in that special way.
Yeah, whatever it took to make an impression. It's nuts, though, the way you hear John Shea talk about that he was actually suspended, not because he gambled on baseball, but because he did something in Las Vegas to shake hands in a lobby for a buck after the day. And look at where we are now. We got the Diamondbacks and Caesars announcing that they're going to be opening a sports book at their ballpark.
Yeah. It was Atlantic City, actually.
Okay, fair enough.
No, but I'm just correcting the record. And the other thing was the fact that it was he and Mantle who got it. Only because Bowie Kuhn, who was the commissioner and sort of designated stuffed owl of the time,
yes,
thought that, you know, oh my God, we can't be linked to gambling. Even though they weren't doing any gambling. They weren't promoting gambling. They were just sitting there glad-handing for people who go to a casino. Now, I don't get it. I don't know that you could get gambling secondhand, even back then. But it was just, you know, president of the uptights deciding, well, we can't have this. And the amazing thing about that story is the hue and cry was so great that they dropped it almost immediately, because it was so stupid.
Yeah.
On so many levels. I mean, you complain now about how baseball didn't promote its best names. You know, try punishing them for nothing.
That's a little much, especially when they're not even playing anymore.
Yeah, anyway. Or gambling.
There's that, too. Somebody says that Snoop's only 49. That can't be right. He's got to be older than that. I mean, what? Dog Pound came out 30 years ago almost. Anyway, so he's 49 years old. He's really only 49 years old.
Born in 1971.
Good God. I thought he was older than that. I really did.
Well,
good job,
there's
Snoop.
Chronological age, and then there's wear on the tires.
There's chronological age. Thank you very much. That's called wordplay.
You know what? I think you win. You can go home.
Thank you. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
It's our final segment this lovely afternoon here in San Francisco, as we have basked in throughout much of the show, Willie Mays' 90th birthday. Happy birthday to one of the greatest living baseball players, the oldest living Hall of Famer, and certainly the coolest address in all of sports. 24 Willie Mays Plaza is just fantastic. And happy birthday. We've been spending an awful lot of time wishing Willie that happy birthday, trying to frame who he was, what he did, what he meant to the game of baseball. Obviously, one of the all-timers, true legends. And tomorrow, I guess they're going to be honoring him as the Giants return for their five-game homestand. They got three with the Padres, two with the Texas Rangers before they got themselves a road trip coming up. Today, the A's played an afternoon game and dropped a getaway day game to the Toronto Blue Jays, who have now won two in a row. So it's a split series with the Blue Jays when it's all said and done. Mike Fiers got cuffed around a little bit today in his second start of the season. We have had a really good conversation with Tim Bontemps about the Warriors, and we'll get back to them in just a second. Alex Dickerson of the San Francisco Giants joined Ray and I earlier today. Great conversation with Alex Dickerson, as always. We just said hello to John Shea talking about Willie Mays. We got to get back to this sound that Jed York gave us, because Jed York stopped by the Niners podcast with Matt Maiocco and Laura Britt over on NBC and was obviously talking about the situation every 49er fan you know, sees going on down at the stadium. You got an incumbent, QB1. You just drafted a rookie quarterback. Tell us how that works out with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance. And Jed York says, plenty of time, plenty of time. Let's watch how it all kind of works itself out.
We've talked about this internally. You know, if we are in a situation where Jimmy goes out and takes us to the Super Bowl again and has an MVP caliber season and does it again, like, there are worse dilemmas to be in. And Jimmy certainly has the ability to do that. I think Kyle's talked about that all along, and knowing it's the most important position in sports. And it's great to have a guy that you do believe in, that has gotten you to a Super Bowl, so you don't have to put the weight of the world on a rookie, whoever it was that we were going to choose. Now that we know that Trey is here, you don't have to put the weight of the world on that kid's shoulders, and he can grow into that position.
I don't think there's a player that they could have drafted at 3, Fields, Mac Jones, Trevor Lawrence, for goodness sakes, where they would have said, yeah, let's let the rookie do it. I mean, it's not just Lance that came with the built-in red shirt year. This is what they wanted to do, I think.
I think, well, the fact is they weren't going to be able to trade up to number one. So, and I think Jacksonville got the one guy who's going to be expected to start hitting the ground running. And I think Trevor Lawrence would have been the guy that you would have drafted if you believed you needed a quarterback to start on day one. Not sure that you can say that about any of the others. And choosing Lance says we're taking the one with the least amount of experience because we're in no hurry. I mean, the Jets are probably going to start Zach Wilson on day one, but that's because the Jets stink.
Right. They also have nobody to hand the reins to.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's getting the job and he's going to get it face first, the way Darnold got it, the way Mark Sanchez got it, the way...
Right. You get it by default because there's no one there to prevent you from having it.
Yeah, somebody must be cannon fodder, and now it's you.
Congratulations. Great way to start a career.
But I think Lawrence is the only guy that they would have basically said, sorry, Jimmy, you lost the job to. Everybody else, sit and wait, shut up. We have one of those already.
Jed would go on to talk about, you know, ideally, let's say Jimmy's ripping it up. And you do go to a Super Bowl. Well, he's actually got 2 years remaining on his contract, which would mean, is there a scenario where Trey Lance would get 2 years before he's starting for the 49ers? And Jed said, yeah, that's an actual good problem to have if that's it.
You know, this Sunday, he turns 21. If he doesn't play until he's 23, you know, but he's got a 15-plus year career. I mean, you know, there were rumors about a guy, and obviously Kyle talked about trading for Aaron. How long did Aaron sit? 2-3 years before he played? And again, I want to make sure that we do everything that we can to make sure that that position is the best it can possibly be in the NFL. And even if he doesn't play for 2 years, we still have an extra $100 million to put back into our team on top of whatever we would have over free agency for the next 5 years.
Now, the $100 million aside, as good of a plan as that is, Ray, 2 years can become 2 weeks, can become 2 plays if Jimmy gets hurt. I mean, that's how it works. Yes, you'd love as long of a wick as you can find before you actually start burning down the Trey Lance candle. But that is not how this league works. And Trey, again, could be starting for the 49ers halftime week one.
He could be, but I think it would take a catastrophe.
Yeah, oh, things have not gone well if that's happening.
And every plan in the NFL is basically written in, you know, faint pencil because of it. I mean, the whole idea behind what the 49ers did 2 years ago was, we'll beat them with depth. We'll have a bunch of different running backs. We'll have, you know, loads of different secondary people that we can sort of mix and match. And we'll do it that way. And it's hard to keep depth in the NFL. So when you're drafting for depth, which is what they did with Trey Lance, you know, the plan is you wait your turn. Your turn may come sooner. It may come later. Just be as ready as you can be every day. And, you know, and then let circumstances dictate, because that's the only thing that's in charge once the season starts. Circumstances.
Right. I think it's all going to be so easy to see. It's going to be readily apparent. It will be no mystery as to when the move needs to be made. You'll have a descending Garoppolo, a rising Lance, and I think it's going to be painfully obvious when that trigger needs to be pulled. Or maybe it'll be harder to who knows? I mean, trying to predict what's about to happen next week in the NFL is a fool's errand. Try it 2 years from now.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be Lance's choice at all. I don't think Lance factors into this. I think the in order of the dominoes that fall, the first is Garoppolo becoming either profoundly ineffective or profoundly injured. And then Lance becomes the factor. It isn't Lance is going to leapfrog Garoppolo.
No, the triggering mechanism to any quarterbacking change doesn't come from Trey starting to pick it up. It comes from Jimmy starting to lay it down.
Yeah, if they wanted the experienced quarterback, the guy you would take is probably Fields because he's played more.
Much more.
Yeah. I mean, if experience mattered that much, Trey Lance would not be on this team. It didn't matter to them because their idea, you know, fungible though it may be, is that Garoppolo's our guy for the foreseeable future. And the foreseeable future could indeed be 3 years. There is indeed a scenario in which they run out of time on Trey Lance. They just say, we got to move on. He can't get the job because Garoppolo's been too good. We're going to have to figure out, do we have to re-sign this guy? And, you know, he's going to want to play somewhere. I mean, that's a possibility too.
Sure. I mean, that's, by the way, that's the dream.
Yeah.
That's the, you don't even bother wishing for this because it's too much. You're getting greedy at that point. Like, oh, we don't even need the drafted stud future quarterback because the guy we were looking to replace, well, turns out he's on a Hall of Fame track and we've won multiple Super Bowls after all. What do you know?
Or we found a new stud quarterback that we like better than him.
That could happen too.
Yeah,
although, the unlikeliest of the scenarios.
Well, yeah, but what if they traded up? I mean, they did it this time. They were supposed to pick 12th, remember?
Right.
And then they moved up because their most crying need was the reliable long-term quarterback. So, I mean, that's why, you know, when everybody's saying, oh, you know, this is going to be the pick that defines Kyle Shanahan. Now you can fix a lot of mistakes if you know you have enough lead time. And I think he's got enough lead time.
But this would set you back. It would officially set you back.
It might set you back, but
plus the investment.
But if it sets you back, then you fix it in 2 years. It's like every year, everybody's in cap trouble. I mean, there was a point, and I'm trying to think of who it was. Somebody was $100 million over the cap. And then miraculously, they fixed it.
Right.
Because they knew they were going to be that. And they knew that it didn't matter how much over the cap you are in the middle of April. You know, it just, you know, every problem gets solved. Nobody ever starts the season over the cap. You know, and if you pick a guy and he turns out to stink or he gets hurt, you pick somebody else the next chance you get.
Jed York went on to say, you know, they're very happy that they got to the path that brought them to Trey Lance. Would you believe Jed York, though, if he told you that Frank Gore helped them scout Trey Lance? Let's hear from Jed York on this one.
We talk a lot, but as soon as we made the trade, I reached out to him and asked him. I was like,
hey. Let me clarify here. He is talking about Frank Gore here. He's saying, I talk a lot to Frank Gore. That's where this is starting with Jed.
We talk a lot, but as soon as we made the trade, I reached out to him and asked him. I was like, hey, man, like, do you know these guys? Because I know Frank trains with a lot of people. And this is a weird year where our scouts really don't have the opportunity and didn't have the opportunity to do as much in person. And I just asked him if he knew any of the guys. And he's like, well, you know, with Mac and Justin, I was like, well, you should look at the North Dakota State kid. And he's like, you're not going to take a North Dakota State kid. I'm like, well, just look at him. I know he's on the list. And he called me, I think, the day or two before the draft. But he was like, man, he's like, you got to take Trey. He's like, this kid's amazing. Like, he can do so many things with Kyle's offense, and Kyle can take it to a next level with all the things that you can do. And, I mean, it was funny the way he described it. It's very, very similar to what both Kyle and John said about Trey and what they loved about Trey. And Frank, 100% independent of it, felt the same way watching him on film and watching some of his interviews and things like that. But it's nice to know that people that I respect and trust we're on the same page. I think Frank is already quasi a scout and an advisor to the organization. So Frank's like a brother to me.
So Frank Gore putting his I feel good about it stamp with no solicitation on Trey Lance. Look, that's got to be a good sign, Ray.
I'd feel good about it if Kyle Shanahan asked him. I mean, Jed York is just doing it out of intellectual curiosity. But, you know, again, I always make a very clear line between what Jed York's job is and what Kyle Shanahan's job is. Jed York is talking to a pal of his about, well, what do you think? But he's not going to run into Kyle Shanahan and say, hey, Frank Gore thinks it's going to be, it ought to be Lance. Because Kyle Shanahan would, because he should, tell Jed, get out.
Right.
I got this.
But, you know,
it's a charming story that may or may not be true. But, you know, to me, you know, Jed York telling me, well, yeah, I was, you know, asking about this too. It kind of feels a little bit like, hey, I want to feel like I'm part of it, even though it's clear that I'm not.
You know, I guess I don't see quite that in that story. What I see,
I have a blacker heart than you.
You do. You absolutely do. The thing with Frank Gore is Frank Gore has forgotten more about football than most people will ever know. So an endorsement of Frank by Frank, which I doubt he just hands away like candy. He's been around the block long enough to know if he can spot a real one or a fake one. I think it does matter. And I think that Kyle Shanahan has got enough respect for players of Frank Gore's ilk, to where hearing that, hey, Gore likes him too, can't be a bad thing. Can't be a completely irrelevant thing. I'm also not saying that it's the decision that helped them reach the Trey Lance decision. It's just it's a piece of positive information put on a young man, and the positive information comes from a trusted source. Or if I could go back to Jim Harbaugh's lingo and jargon, a trusted agent. Frank Gore was a trusted agent, and he remains so, Ray.
Well, I mean, okay. I mean, I just to me, I never buy those sort of romantic stories. It just to me, the decision was made on Lance a long time before. So actually, Frank Gore was basically lucky in telling a guy who's not involved with the selection, hey, I like this guy.
You know what the follow-up would have been right there? If Frank Gore had said, don't draft Trey Lance, do you avoid him?
Well, we wouldn't hear the story.
Of course not.
Yeah. No, I mean, but no, I look, if you're a 49er fan, Jed York's opinion on any player should matter zero. Just because that's the way the best teams operate. If Jed York was a good football guy, then that would be different. But he's not. He's a business major. His job is to write checks and hire people to make those decisions. And that's it. So that when he's talking to Frank Gore, these are just two guys shooting the breeze.
Sure.
And so, you know, I mean, it's a charming story, but I don't know. Those don't move me. I don't care how much you know, recon Jed York did about a pick that had already been decided weeks before.
So let me ask you about going back to the well one more time for Grandpa Richard Sherman. Uncle Sherm says he's thinking about signing up for one more dance, and the 49ers could be a dance partner. Look, I would be, I think, a little more interested in him than any other 33-year-old quarterback and cornerback, pardon me, in football history. He's a coach on the field. He's a mentor in the ear. He's a set of eyes in the film session, which to me feel hard to replace. Invaluable information spills from Richard Sherman's mouth. Does it turn into, you know, and Akilah Witherspoon was an awesome corner instantly because he was around Richard Sherman? Obviously, the answer there is no. Richard Sherman was asked about possibly having one more spin around the dance floor with the 49ers. Here's what he said.
There's always a chance it could end up working out back in the Bay. And I head back that way. You know, that's another place I'm really comfortable going. Obviously, know the staff, know the team well. Just spent time there and would be ecstatic, you know, if something happened there. But, you know, they have a situation. But it's one of those things that will happen probably late or during the season, if it happens at all.
Again, doesn't sound like he's signing up for a 17-game schedule right there. But if the Niners had a price point that made a lot of sense to add Richard Sherman, would you do it at the age of 33, Ray?
Well, if you're signing anybody in the middle of the season, it's because you've got an injury problem.
Right.
And at that point, Richard Sherman is probably as good as anybody else who's available, maybe better. But if Richard Sherman is available, you have to be a little wary because it means that no other team saw the wisdom in getting him. And there are teams in the NFL that could use him right now, not only for his brain, but also for the ability he still has. So I think I'd be a little leery, but I wouldn't rule it out because if you got to get somebody, the supply hut's pretty empty at that point.
You know who should bend over backwards to sign him? I don't know how interested he would be. The Raiders. The Raiders need somebody in that secondary who knows what he's doing.
You're right, and Richard Sherman is no fool. I don't see him wanting to play on a team that seems as dysfunctional from the outside as it is. Now, maybe he has maybe he and John Gruden can get along, but that's a team that, frankly, has been 30th, 24th, and 32nd defensively in the last 3 years.
Oh, no, look. You should follow the Willie Mays advice.
Don't touch them.
Don't touch them.
What I'm saying is the Raiders need a guy who can play every down.
Right.
They need to be an impact guy. And I don't know that Richard Sherman is that anymore.
No, they need what the Raiders need is a 23-year-old bookend corner who you can
they need Richard Sherman 8 years ago.
Yeah. Not available. Richard Sherman, though, was asked, what do you think about the situation that the 49ers have put themselves in from a quarterbacking standpoint? Jimmy G, he's still the man in the room, but we all know that there's a new young man in the room. What do you think of that, Sherm?
I see it playing out exactly like Kyle said it would. I see Jimmy G being a starter. He has a fantastic grasp of the offense. He knows the team. He has respect of his men. And he's already led him to a Super Bowl. I see Trey learning behind him. And if something crazy happens, you know, and Jimmy gets banged up or something like that, I think they'd be really comfortable putting Trey in there and letting him, you know, learn the offense and letting him get his reps. But I don't think they want to throw him in the fire if they don't have to.
So there you go. Richard Sherman weighing in on it. If he could come back into the room, I've heard of worse ideas. Let's just put it that way. And you don't say that often about 33-year-old cornerbacks. That usually sounds like the worst idea a team could have. But in Richard Sherman's case, he gets the benefit of the doubt until he proves that he doesn't belong out there anymore. And I don't think we just went through that.
Yeah, I would suggest that once the 32 rosters are filled and the season starts, he would be the best available cornerback on the open market.
True. Yeah, I think that that's a safe place to put him.
So, yeah, I mean, the point is the 49ers, if Sherman is outlining the scenario correctly, the 49ers would react to an injury problem to go and get him. And the question would be, well, is he available or is he already signed with somebody else?
We are about to get you out to a little Warriors Live, Warriors and Oklahoma City Thunder. But right now, we want to wrap up with a little something that we like to call today's most amazing thing. Nash, hit it.
Oh, my God. It's going to be amazing.
Actually, I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
Oh, it's amazing. Oh, my God. That is amazing. Oh, my God. This is going
to
be...
Don't say it. I swear to God. Now, it's time for the most amazing thing.
It's amazing, so amazing.
All right, one more time, one last time from us anyways. Happy 90th birthday to Willie Mays. Baseball's oldest living Hall of Famer. That's amazing right there. Hopefully it's a great night for Willie. Giants will be back at it tomorrow. Meanwhile, SportsCenter had this one. On Mike Trout's start to the year, on the day where Albert Pujols gets designated for assignment, let me give you this Mike Trout stats. Guess where he is in terms of MLB rankings entering the season today? Mike's off to a little bit of a nice start, Ray. He's first in batting average, first in on-base percentage, first in on-base plus slugging, first in on-base slugging plus, and he's first with four intentional base on balls. He's fourth in hits, seventh in home runs, seventh in runs scored. Not a bad start to the year for Mikey Trout.
Has been, is, will continue to be the best player in baseball.
Name that fish!
Trout is the name of that fish. How about this? Of the three no-hitters that we've seen in baseball this year, all three no-hitters, Ray, in which only one batter reached a base. All three no-hitters were 90 feet away from being perfect games. Joe Musgrove had a hit by pitch. Rondon had a hit by pitch.
Rondon,
thank you. And Johnny Means had a drop third strike.
Yep.
So three no-hitters with zero walks and zero errors. We were that close to three straight perfect games.
And the way they're hitting, we're going to be closer to a bunch more.
We're probably going to see a couple more. Little news for you on the Warriors front. Kelly Oubre Jr. is going to be reevaluated in 1 to 2 weeks on his left wrist. So hopefully that goes well and he does get back into the mix. But in the meantime, they don't need Kelly Oubre Jr. to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. And you get a double shot of the Thunder tonight and on Saturday. It is 2-0 time for the Golden State Warriors. Put these two wins in your pocket because Utah and Phoenix are here on Monday and Tuesday next week. Ray, we got one more show to wrap up the week. Tomorrow, we'll talk to you then. In the meantime, thanks to Tim Bontemps, Alex Dickerson, and John Shea for joining us today. Lucas and Nash, good stuff all around. Please do remember that Warriors Live is coming up next with JD and Covey, and that sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.